This is a Green Juice podcast. We talk all things resilience, where I get to sit down with an incredible individual and they share their story of navigating this tough thing called life, what they did to get through, and what they did to continue to move forward strongly. So listen, people, what we'll do is we'll do our thing, right? Let's just get straight into it. We know our guest. Many of us know our guest. If you don't, I'm going to introduce our guest. But let's just do our thing. We all stay live as we are, but please just microphones on mute so we don't have to hear your side conversations around how Friday sucks. And we'll do our thing at the end again. We'll always come on, and if there's anything you want to ask of Greg or share back to Greg or whatever it be, or compliment me, we'll take it all. So, people, Greg Crims with me this morning. Good morning, Greg.
Yeah, good morning, Clay. Good morning, everyone.
So I'm going to introduce Greg on his behalf, because that's just what I do, because it's my podcast, if you like. So simply, Greg's my spirit animal. Love this man. He's remarkable. He's inspiring. I've learned so much from him. Hopefully he might say something similar about my good self. You know, we've had a good, strong, healthy relationship, and we sit behind closed door. We sit there and we debate things back and forth. We talk about things an awful lot. We learn from each other, and you know, an hour gets lost very quickly. We go down all sorts of rabbit holes. So Montana's got a broomstick out there, and I've told her that if this goes to left or right, that she needs to bang on the glass and remind us of what we're meant to be doing. That's a fair intro.
That's really nice. I appreciate that. And look, for the listeners, I think it's important that I do say, when I first met Clay, I didn't realise how big an impact he would have on my life.
Stop it now.
No, seriously.
Was that
and I'm sure everyone listening and those not able to join us today would understand and agree with that. And Clay said something really important which might tie in with today. He said to me that no matter what I brought to the business and to the team as a coach, I would probably learn and get more. And that rather than being fully rounded out, this was my moment to grow.
Interesting.
And I've never forgotten that. It was an early conversation because it was true in every way. And part of it is I grew because, not only because I was open to growth under Clay's, I'm going to say tutelage, you tutored me, and but was I desired to grow. It was a really deep piece. And part of that growth was out there sharing what I was discovering. And as you share what you learn, you double down on it. So big call out to Clay.
Well, I love it. Well, that's the end of the podcast, people.
Thanks for coming.
Between Pete telling me I look young, radiant. I think he used the word radiant. And now you are doing that little counterpiece back. I love it. So that's the session. Have a great Friday, people. Enjoy yourselves. Look, let's learn some stuff from Greg. You know, like I threw out a couple of subjects yesterday in the email, the reminder that we'd be sitting here this morning having a chat, and they were easy to come to mind very quickly. I didn't have to give a bunch of thought, and they're contextually relevant to, I think, where we are right now as a business. Again, we're a business that is continually changing, and the one thing I've learned now in 22 years is that's not going to change. That's the one constant, is that we are going to continue to change and we're not going to change in that regard. So there's a contradiction. But ultimately, there's a bit going on again as we speak. So I thought these things came to head very quickly, and who better to talk about them with and learn from is that of Greg. So I'm going to dive straight into it. And I guess I'm going to jump around in sequence quite a bit because that's what I do. I don't work to script very well. And regardless of what I just said to you a couple of minutes ago, Greg, I'm going to start with, I want to talk about mindfulness. But
yeah,
I don't want to talk about mindfulness in the sense that about people sitting here right now and visualizing and four box breathing, or Zabit, our friend, the educator, learning from such. I want to understand in simple, pragmatic terms for all of us. If I say to you, mindfulness in this crazy, busy world that we exist, what does it mean to you?
Mindfulness. I took a pause then. You all would have picked up. It wasn't that I didn't have an answer. What I chose to do was center myself to this moment, to this question, and to allow this question to be what I would address. So all of you sitting there right now, will have conflicting thoughts running through your head even as I'm speaking. They will be things you need to attend to shortly, things that you haven't done already that are concerning you, little anxieties. They may not be thoughts yet, but they're ticking away. And so with mindfulness, it's being present. And sometimes the best place to find yourself is just to stop. Just to stop, because we're on this hamster wheel, all of us. And life, you know, will take us anywhere. And it will, and we are actually being drawn along by all of these emotions initially, because how we think is how we feel is how we act. But what we can do is just stop and observe and be aware of the fact that we are here now. And probably now is one of the biggest words that I could explore for the next 2 hours with you.
Mm.
So mindfulness is simply being aware of where you are now, what matters now, what you will give attention to versus everything that's past and that which may or may not transpire in the future.
It's quite a remarkable piece to open with, you know, like, and I drifted off myself there in a positive way. I was sort of just watching the bars of the recorder move back and forth, and I was just actually listening. And that's a challenge for me, because for people listening right now, you and I are a yin to a yang with each other, because we're completely different styles. You know, I'm to self-describe, I guess, I'm reasonably intense, I'm fast-moving in that regard. Even when sort of the duck above the waterline looks like he's sort of floating around a bit or bobbing around and he's sort of looking a bit tired, those little legs don't stop. And when I mean those little legs, it generally means my brain. I've got monkey mind, right? But I sit here right now and I've sort of done this level of intro, and then I sit across from you and everything's just slowed down for me, right? It's just dramatically slowed down. I think that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, slowing down. And Clay mentioned to me earlier that, you know, like, is it simply slowing down and smelling the roses? And the short answer is yes. You know, we're all busily running through the garden of life, and there's all sorts of things that we actually meet along the way. That's the now piece. It's where we are now. And yet we're always trying to get to the next section of the garden without stopping and smelling what's around us.
Do you know, sorry, Greg, to cut in there, you know the one that comes to mind when you say that is, I'm fascinated by people and their mobile phones these days. And I'm fascinated by, you know, something remarkable happens in the world. You know, it was just the rain and the floods in Queensland. And there's always this news footage of these people, I would say, a lot stupidly running down to the beach's edge to watch this thing unfold. But they weren't standing there with their forearms rested on the banister or the railing and absorbing nature at its fiercest, if you like. They're all standing there holding a screen up in the air and looking at it through a screen and getting a recording, and the recording so that they can race it home and put it on Facebook or or X or whatever the hell you put things on these days, because I actually stopped all social media in that regard. And I thought, why wouldn't you just stand there and absorb nature at its greatest?
So, Clay, you've really opened up a can of worms for both of us now, because that's exactly what we're observing. People believe they're present now because they can record it in a photo. That's not being present. In actual fact, their whole mindset is to, rather than absorb it, as you say, is to record it, because they have an intention to share it. And that intention to share is somewhere in the future. And they're already planning in their mind, is that a good shot? Is that the shot I want to take back? Is that the one that people will like? Where's the money shot? How close to the water's edge can I get? How stupid can I be in this moment so that I make a big impact out here?
Do you know what, on that as well, you know, I was just thinking as you're saying that, you know, not only all those things you just described, but we then go ahead and filter the photo further.
Yeah.
So it's actually not reality.
It's not even true in any
sense. It's not true. All of a sudden that that fierce storm that I'm looking at, it looks a whole lot fiercer.
Yeah.
That's such a word. Yeah.
It's a misrepresentation.
Correct.
And then if you think about it further, those people who are waiting for these representations, they're not being taken there. They're not having the experience. They're being deceived to some degree by a touched-up photo. And they're not experiencing there now. So, you know, it's like the butterfly effect. you race out with your camera so that you can be somewhere else while you're here. You're not appreciating now, so that you can send something into cyberspace for everyone else to absorb, so that they can escape from being here
and then you can
present now.
You can reflect on a later date. You know, remember that time that I was standing there watching this storm. Right?
Yeah,
It's interesting. There's a great little montage on Instagram, and it's Tyson Fury. He's got the cool background and everything else, and he's talking about, I don't care if I lose, because he's got that gypsy background, right?
Yes.
And he's talking about, I don't care if I lose it all tomorrow.
Mm.
He said, because it's never really ours anyway.
Yeah.
He said, the only thing we take with us is our memories.
Yes, and then no.
Yeah, that's quite a remarkable piece. So I'm going to bring it back a little bit, because this could go deep and heavy, and it probably will being you and I, but I was driving to work this morning, and I've got this saying, and I never know where I picked it up from, but I like it. And I say it to people quite often when I'm coaching them, just because everyone else is running doesn't mean we have to run.
Perfect.
And I'm not sure where I picked that up, but I do use it quite a bit. Mm. I actually thought about it this morning driving to work.
Yep.
Because as I've just described, and as we all know, a lot's happened overnight here, so to speak, again.
Yep.
And a lot of chaoticness and everything else. But then we also know the contagious nature of emotions. They're highly contagious.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we find people running around with arms in air, sharing that with others, others sharing it back, reflecting it back, so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, we find ourselves in these whirlwinds, these absolute whirlwinds.
Yeah.
And I want to come back to that if you remind me later. I want to talk about whirlwind, because I watched an incredible documentary on tornadoes the other day. And I want to promote it because it's worth watching. But there's an interesting factor. And I guess I'll share it now. This particular documentary is on Netflix at the moment. I think it's called Twister, and it's not the movie Twister, but it's a story of a small town. I can't recall its name. It's like Forge or Filgrim or something in the Midwest, in Tornado Alley. And whatever period of time, it was a few years ago, whatever it was, this major tornado hit. And it actually killed 165 people, and it decimated the whole town. It wiped the whole town out. And it's remarkable. And it all happened on prom night. Not prom, graduation night.
Yeah.
So it's sort of built around these students and their whole experience. And there was those who were graduating, but there was also those who were sort of on the, not necessarily graduating, but the local kids and everything else and their experiences. And it varied dramatically. You know, one kid was working at a frozen yogurt store.
Yeah.
Another group were driving around in a car. Another group are actually storm chasers, amateur storm chasers. So they chased the storm and then they found themselves caught in it. And I won't spoil it for anyone.
Mm.
But what's remarkable in that piece, in what they describe as the tornado, is that when the tornado first hits, it is absolutely terrifying. It is chaotic. You know, there's an element in there where one of them describes it like it's someone's got a sandblaster up against them. Joplin, thank you, whoever that was, 2011, Joplin tornado. And it describes it feeling like a sandblaster against them. And it's just horrific. It's terrifying. Then all of a sudden, and this happens over the course of seconds to minutes or whatever it be, there's this absolute peace.
Mm.
There's this absolute calmness.
Yeah, in the midst of the storm.
And they describe, the eye.
The eye of the storm.
They describe the eye of the tornado.
Mm.
And they're sitting there, and these kids are in this bottle shop where they're taking refuge, and they're sitting on the floor and all this chaos, and they're describing tractors flying past their eyes and all this stuff, and all of a sudden there's this calmness and this light comes through, and it's like a godlike moment, right?
Yeah.
The most spiritual moment. And they start to come to peace. Now, what's interesting is they get warned. That's one of them warns, no, hold on, because the other wall is still got to hit them.
The back end's coming.
The back end's coming, right? Yeah. But I guess for me, it's a great analogy, right? It's a great piece in the sense that we're going to be hit by these walls, these tornadoes. At one minute of sun shining, and next minute this tornado comes from nowhere, and that's literally how it happens and it unfolds.
Yeah.
And it's going to hit us, and we are going to have to hold on.
Yeah.
But if we hold on long enough and strong enough, there's going to be this moment.
Yep.
This moment where you can regroup. Because actually they do regroup in that moment.
Yes.
As secondary as it is, they regroup to turn around and say, hold on.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
But they've got a breath.
Yes.
And so to bring it back to the start, Just because everyone else is running doesn't mean we have to run.
Yeah. In fact, there's probably an imperative, and we were going to talk about leadership, I believe, also possibly. Leaders in particular have to find that moment. They need to find the I. So I'm saying in modern language and parlance that nowadays we can actually find the eye of a storm in a radar. So I'm going to build on this tornado concept. Mm-hmm. And great leaders are calm enough to realise there is an eye. There is a place where I can stop. There is a place where I can regroup and protect my team or whoever I'm working, or just myself, or my family, or my friends, or my environment, or the situation. That moment is there. And so the stop piece is the critical, so that when everything breaks out into chaos, the important thing is not to become part of the chaos, because what will happen is if you visualize the tornado, it's actually twisting, it's turning. And if you surrender to that, you become like the tractor.
Mm.
Yes, you've got to find a safe place. That's the first piece. But that's not panic. That's actually survival. It's knowledge. It's wisdom, knowing I must find immediate refuge. But once the storm is around you, you don't want to be caught in the storm. And that's the stop piece. Yeah, I'm in a storm. I'm in a tornado. And if I'm not careful, I'll be a tractor in the air, and it'll be great footage for someone to watch me go.
Bit of TikTok.
Well, I'll put a cape on and I'll be super green, yeah, or something, you know. So the thing is, the stop is the critical first step. And great leaders stop. And I can think of circumstances out on site where I've described, you know, like I've almost promoted smoking.
We'll edit, don't worry, keep going, we'll edit that shit out.
Well, but you know, you know, we teach people to breathe.
Yeah.
But if you look at reality, you go out on a mine site, CSI somewhere, they're crushing, everyone's covered in filth and dirt. It's a hard day and the plant goes down and the great leader emerges. And yeah. It's generally someone with a beard, long hair, probably hadn't had a lot to eat all day, and they'll walk over to the edge of the, you know, platform or wherever, and they'll roll a durry and they'll just sit back.
Do you know what? You've distracted me, because all I can think of now is the fittest, healthiest person that I know is Laura Britton.
Oh, and, well, Laura breathe.
Now all I can picture is she's got a packet of Marlboro and she's out there in the back of...
No, you've got to rule it. You've got to...
smoking away, saying, well, great crap, Sam.
Yeah, you all... I've smoked a cigarette in my life. Good girl, Laura, well, and don't you do it.
Time to start, right? So look, what I'll do is I'll interrupt there and I'll grab that leadership piece.
Yeah.
Because when I talk leadership, I have a problem. And those who work closely with me know that I have a problem with the term leadership, because I think it's loosely used. I think that many of people believe, because of something that's written on an email or a business card, defines them as being of a leader. And then they sort of talk of, oh, I've got a leadership meeting to go to, I'm a leader. And I will challenge that to the hills, right? Like, I only said to you earlier, for me, management is a competency. I need a competency to be able to manage budgets, schedules, rosters, activities, purchases, whatever it be.
Yeah, stuff.
I need a skill to lead people.
Mm.
So for me, leadership's a skill.
Yeah.
Meaning I need to learn a suite of skills, I need to practice those skills, and I need to make sure that they're razor sharp.
Yeah.
Now for me, what I'm alluding to is, leadership is not defined by business card, title, org chart, or other.
Yeah.
Leadership is a combination of character and competence.
Yeah.
And for me, everyone that's listening, I look at as a leader first and foremost. Like trust, like respect. It's up to you to erode that. Everyone's got the capability to be a leader.
Yes.
Right? Everyone can demonstrate a level of character and competence to help protect themselves, other, to preside, to provide for, and so on and so forth. So when we talk leadership throughout this morning, we are not referencing, it's not for half the audience to sort of drift off and say, well, I'm not a leader, I'm just a team member. That's rubbish.
Mm.
And I'd remove that word just anyway.
Team member.
Everyone's there for a reason. So I want everyone to look at themselves through the lens of, we're a leader.
Yeah. You know, Clay, as you were speaking, the definition between leader that you've defined for us today and manager really helps us to understand that management, you can actually go out and you can learn through a university or through a qualification, through rote practice, mm-hmm. you know, how to be good at managing, you know, maybe the wheat in a silo,
mm-hmm.
you know, wheat in, wheat out, all that sort of stuff. Leadership, I think innately, all humans have the traits to be leaders. But they don't have the wherewithal to develop those traits and skills that are innate within us. And in fact, we live in a world where it's increasingly difficult to actually lead others and self. So I'm no longer just talking about teams, mm-hmm. I'm talking others and self. If we don't understand that there is still a process of development or an apprenticeship that one goes through that, in my view, is you never qualify to lead. So early in life, and I'll give you a quick insight to where I was at. From my earliest memories, I believed I should lead. You know, if someone said, who would like to lead the team to do this? As a four-year-old, my hand would have. And it wasn't because I wanted to be at the front. It was I wanted to be responsible in that moment for self and others. But as time went by, I didn't develop the skills. I simply had the innate belief. It wasn't just a desire. It was an innate belief that I meant to take control in this situation in order to have an outcome. And so over time, I realized that you do nothing without others. And I lived in a realm where I actually developed my own theory of leadership management, because they were confused at the time. As a young man, it was basically to get stuff done through the efforts of others.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've parroted something similar in the past.
And when I look at it, I didn't look at situational leadership. So we talk about situational leadership. And today, as a leader, I quite often, the first act of leadership is to find a leader that I can actually basically support in an environment, in a situation. And why do I do that? Because I know I haven't had the skill set developed over time to be competent in the moment. So there's still a competency in, be it personal leadership or other. And increasingly, I'm not that person that puts their hands up and says, let me lead. Increasingly, I'm looking at who's done the work here, who's got the best competency, who is the person I must support. And so I'd throw that out there to everyone that has that innate desire, one, to be a good leader, a strong leader, whether it's to self, family, society, friendships, professional, that first and foremost, ask yourself in every moment, am I the best person in this environment to be the recognised leader, or am I the best person to actually help identify that leader and then to support them? Because at some point in time, if I'm not the best person, even though I may not know it, I am an imposter, and it won't end well, or it won't end as well as it could. So we live in a world right now where I'm going to say that there are a lot of people who have the innate desire to lead, but who don't have the competency yet in that environment to be the best leader. And there's two choices there. One, there is no one else, and they find themselves.
Mm.
But two, we appoint the wrong person if it's something that, even within the leadership of a friendship, a home, a family. I remember I took a trip years ago of Komatsu. You know, we used to spend all the money, get on the plane, take customers everywhere.
Yeah.
And I always remember one of the clients saying to me, because there's a whole lot of us, all alpha males, and I had a very big credit card to spend for their benefit. And he calmed me down. He said, Greg, it'll be all right. A leader will emerge, because I was trying to herd the cats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And sure enough, Within hours, it became really evident.
I like that.
That even though I had the credit card, the most appropriate leader in that space emerged.
Mm.
And this guy had given me a gift because he'd shared with me, you know, whilst you have the card, you're not necessarily the best guy to lead this crowd.
Love it.
It was gentle.
Yeah, I love it.
And he wasn't. But he was saying, let's find him. And he said, he'll emerge. So we could talk on and on and on about leadership. But what I would like to say is, every day you've got to be honing something. So it might be the capacity to build trust by showing interest in another human being. Like we could talk about Lencioni's work about, you know, like in order to be a successful leader, you must have trust. But how do you gain trust?
Mm-hmm.
How do you build trust with other people? And as you and I know, building trust is about first and foremost having an impact on someone.
I'll grab that. There's two things I want to sort of to say. I want to summarise very quickly the piece you just shared. You know, what's bouncing around in my head is that leadership is not an entitlement. Leadership becomes a responsibility.
Yeah.
And part of that responsibility is that I need to learn skills. I need to be good at this. I need to self-reflect.
Yeah.
You know, I've got that saying that I throw around ever and a day and everything else, and I only used it yesterday, funny enough, but... you know, if your feedback's your own and your mother's, you need a third source.
Yeah.
Because they're like far out.
Yeah,
you know?
Mum
like,
wanted me to be everything.
Yeah, mum said you're awesome, right? So, and I pretty much look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm awesome. No, well, you need a third source, right?
Yeah.
So you and I use the term, I'm digressing a little bit, but I'll sum it up. But we use the term this morning, we talk about that piece, and I apologise if it's incorrect, but my understanding was knowingness, and knowingness is where I feel I've got the answer before the question's even been asked.
Yeah.
And there's an ignorance, there's an arrogance that goes with that statement, right?
Yep.
So back to our good selves, because we're not looking at leadership in a singular format here. We're not looking at it in the context of our leader team at MinRes or whatever it be, right? What we're looking at is as a human being, as a leader.
Yeah.
And so it might be being a parent, it might be being a friend, it might be being a part of a sporting group, or whatever it may well be.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. The environmental might change, the context might change, but what's required doesn't change from the human being.
And that is exactly, in fact, thank you for capturing one of the things that was running through my head. But there is a commonality. There's a thread there in personal leadership, and that is first of all being willing to invest in self. And it sounds a bit selfish, you know, concentrate, focus on self. And we were watching a podcast, so we'll share, you know, we're here early, everyone, I just want you to know, great podcast, and how to start your day, and investing in self. And how often do we start our days slightly behind? And so from the moment we get up, we're investing in others. You know, like for the parent waking up with a child that's already awake, are you investing in self or the child or the children or the partner? Or are you racing to get on the train or the bus or into the car?
We speak about this, right, in simple terms.
Yep.
How can I help other if I can't help myself?
Can't help myself.
It's so cliche.
Yep.
But the whole aeroplane one, when the mask drops, what do they tell you to do? Put the mask on you first.
Yes, you first. So there's a you first piece, and I think it's pertinent because unless you're developing as a human being, how are you going to lead other human beings if you cannot lead yourself? It's a real piece here that, in my view, personal leadership begins with an investment in self. And it means understanding that there are times when you must be selfish. And we have a negative view of the word selfish. But in actual fact, self-love is the more you have that sense of self-esteem, the more that you understand your purpose, and we could talk about purpose in a big way, the more capacity you have then to give of yourself. But if we start out with this mission, without actually being generous to self, what's happening is we're depleting rather than topping up. We're not building and growing, and the world around us is moving on. And the world we're living in is so fast moving, I don't even recognise it.
Well, the two, you know, they're ingrained within you, even though that you're external, but still the team.
Yep.
you know, the gentleman listening this morning, the coaches listening this morning will appreciate this. They hear it from me way too repetitively and in recent days. Two things that are golden principles within our team, and they're actually documented, is ultimately don't try and save the world.
Yeah.
And secondly, don't be a monkey with a machine gun.
Mm.
And I throw that around non-stop. I actually used that term with someone yesterday in a more senior capacity. I mean, I just visualise. I once saw you bit of YouTube footage or something, Instagram, whatever it was. So it must have been true.
Yep.
And it was this monkey with a machine gun that had picked up a machine gun in a militant camp or whatever it was. And it's firing off and people are diving around everywhere and bullets are spraying and the monkey's falling backwards. And I just visualise that in how we operate, unfortunately, many a times amidst whatever you want to call it, a level of crisis, chaos or change.
So let's take it back just one moment, because the monkey with the machine gun I really resonate with, because I have been so many times in my life a monkey with a machine gun.
Just hoping to hit something, right?
Yeah.
The right thing. Just hoping to hit the right
thing. Yeah, because I don't like what's happening around me, and out comes the machine gun. It's a really quick fix. Doesn't fix anything.
But it's like it's the inability for me to zero in on what the real problem is.
So correct.
The counter to that is, I always say to people, we need to be a sniper.
Correct.
We need to dial in and hit the right target.
So yes.
If I share back to the group for a minute, think about in your personal lives. We often just fire bullets everywhere trying to work out what is it that's going to make me happy.
Yep.
What is it I'm going to make me happy, right? Yep. And we do that repetitively, and we keep watching podcasts, we keep listening to things, reading things.
Yep.
But occasionally you might need to just sit on that hill as a sniper, go back to the mindfulness piece, and just wait for the perfect target to come along.
So let me grab that, because I prepared, obviously, for today. I gave some thought to what we might talk about. And I just want to share with everyone on the other end right now, everyone that's joined us and perhaps those who dial in later, there is one thing that's common. Well, there's lots of things that are common. We're all going to live. We're all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that's common to all humans is we want to be happy. Doesn't matter who that human being is. And I'm going right through to the worst of humans. They still want to be happy. Adolf Hitler, I'm sure, wanted to be happy. In a strange way of doing things.
Sure.
Vladimir Putin, I am certain, wants to be happy. You know, every mad terrorist out there wants to be happy. It's an innate desire to be happy. So what we do is we chase it like monkeys with machine guns, without even understanding what it is, other than an emotion that we feel at times. And so...
And I guess to add to that as well, because that's such a powerful piece, and just so it's not lost in the moment... It's okay also not to be happy.
Correct.
Because this is the thing, you know, I listened to something yesterday, I think it was, and it was about, you know, no, it was actually this morning, Dan Hassler.
Yep.
Positive psychology
yep.
is not about being happy every day.
Yeah.
Positive psychology is doing positive things.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so that's a good point to be made as well.
Yeah. And so you've actually taken it to the next level, because you don't have to be happy all the time, but what you can do is be aware of who you are in that moment. And if you're understanding you're not happy, I'm not happy, then you go back to the tornado and you stop and you realize there's another front of misery coming towards me, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because beyond that is something that's similar to the eye. There will be a bit of peace on the back end. And then we can start to clean up. And that will trigger a whole new level. But there will be a moment of satisfaction which triggers, I feel good. I feel happy in this moment.
It just came together for me as well, because this sounds so level one, 101, like I've just read the front page of the brochure. But what is your role here? And what I mean by that is I constantly ask leadership across organisation, what is your role? What is the role of a leader, right?
Yeah.
And we define it the way that we define it, and the team works to that, and so on and so forth. But I was working with someone the other day, and they were describing to me what their day looks like.
Mm.
And they're asking for a level of support around these varying different contexts. From one minute, you've got the upset person sitting opposing you.
Yeah.
One minute, you've got to deliver this. One minute, you've got to do that and everything else. And what came to mind at the time, which I've since parrot it a few times going forward, is ask yourself the question, what is my role here? What is my role?
Yeah.
And it sounds so simple, right? Yeah. But if we think about everything we've just said to this point,
yeah.
Right now I leave this podcast in half an hour's time.
Yeah.
Someone comes into this office and they're very upset about the changes.
Yeah.
I need to ask myself, even though I know what my role is, generally speaking, as a coach and so on and so forth,
yep.
I need to say in this conversation right now, yep. what is my role?
Yep.
Because my role in this conversation right now might be just to listen.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it's the same with everything. I mean, if I'm, yep. If I'm a parent,
yep.
my kid comes up to me, if you like, and
yep.
I know what my role is. I'm dad.
Yes. Right?
But in this situation, yep. it's like situational leadership.
Yes, it is.
This situation right now,
yep.
what is yep. my role?
Yep.
Because does my son right now need tough love?
Yep.
Or does he just need dad?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And so, again, this comes back. And we're tying, it is tying mindfulness into this because in
so.
Every moment, what we need to do is have that pause. And in that pause, as you say, assess what is required of me now in this moment. And sometimes it's even in your solitude, you need to ask, what do I need to be me now? Mm-hmm. So I'm going a little deep there. But if you can actually develop it for self, then you'll learn to do it for others.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have, maybe some of you do or don't experience this, but, you know, I now have the gift of time. I have a lot more time where it's just Greg, mm-hmm. with Greg, not having to respond to others. And in that space, I actually do ask exactly that question. What should I be feeding my mind? So let's go into something. For example, your brain is feeding you thoughts constantly, whether you like it or not. You talk about monkey mind. I've got 10 monkey mind. And Sam Harris, if you've ever heard of Sam Harris's... You'll understand. If you haven't, you may wish to look up Sam Harris on YouTube. But he said one day on a podcast, he said, you know, the mind has no shame or knows no shame. And so the brain will be running around and it'll bring things to you that you wouldn't even utter to others in the moment. Mm-hmm. And then I reflect on that. What I think about, I become and bring about. Not every thought, but what I think, what I intentionally think about. So I ask myself that question while I'm driving along with the 10 monkeys that are talking to me, or while I'm sitting back, or even while I'm trying to read something or do something. The monkeys are chattering. And I ask myself, they are planting seeds for thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm going to curate this a bit. And I'm going to strip it back to what matters now. And that's a powerful piece, because if you strip it back to what matters now and you become skillful with that, then you ask that question of yourself with others. And then suddenly you have different results. Because you're right. You know, if we go back to the sun, sometimes you've got to be this authoritarian person that says there is a boundary here that we cannot cross.
Mm-hmm.
Other times you need to understand the boundary's being crossed, but this is my son.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs my support now. He's already gone across, so why am I reacting?
Mm-hmm.
And it's being that moment of awareness, who you are right now, rather than responding to an emotion. Getting a bit deep there, but
no, it's really powerful stuff for all of us. I mean, I just want to link it all to this point, because we've got a window left, but I want to talk about some other things in that window that'll all be part of this. So if we go back, you know, let's just summarize at this point, because these are the conversations that get deep and everything else. We talk about mindfulness.
Yeah.
Yep, there's all sorts of apps and bits and pieces we can yep. purchase today and promote, and there's courses we can do and all those different yep. things, and it's great to learn about things and learn some skills and yep. so on and so forth. But we can practice mindfulness, and we should be trying to practice mindfulness right now.
Yeah.
Because we're sitting here and we're engaging in a conversation, but it's easy to become very distracted. I just have. I've had little pop-ups coming up on my screen yep. left, right and centre.
Yep.
There's little bits of stimulus everywhere. And that's yep. what we just talked about then, yep. is the brain is constantly being stimulated.
Absolutely.
Right? The modern day, you know, sitting in the corner of the cave back in primal time,
yeah,
it was dark. maybe a little bit of a flicker of the fire that I focused on, but that was about it, right? Yes. Fast forward to modern day, we see we've got things popping up all over the screen.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've ever been to Japan, but watching Japanese television,
crazy.
Far out. The screen size within the big screen is the size of your iPhone, and everything around the side. So there's like bingo going on. There's all sorts of activities going on. Yep. I couldn't watch TV there. I like watching TV, right? So the mindfulness is, how do we continue to stop and ensure that we are conscious and engaged in what we're doing right here, right now?
So one of my favorite things is doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually stopped teaching mindfulness intentionally.
Interesting.
Intentionally. And the reason is because if I share with you how to, it has absolutely no value unless you go out and do the work.
What, the certificate on the wall's not going to help me? No. The black belt's not going to help me?
No.
Stop it now.
No. So it's do the work. If someone wants to know something they can do that will actually create a form of mindfulness, I'm happy to share that. But I no longer, you know, have this desire to get out in the world and share with people my practices. I have more than one practice. But what I do know is, if you do the work in whatever form mindfulness is for you, you become increasingly aware. And in that space of awareness, you become an observer. So I can say, sitting here right now, I'm being distracted like you are by various things. But I'm really aware of it. And I'm coming back to our conversation. And I'm coming back, even when I'm speaking to you, I'm reading your face, I'm thinking your thoughts. What does Clay want to say next? Have I said too much? I'm in that state of not only aware of you, but I'm also observing myself in this moment.
But that's also to say, we've got to be mindful that we don't, there we go, we've got to be mindful when we do a mindfulness.
Yep.
That ultimately we don't saturate our mind with too many additional thoughts.
Correct.
It's like the thief of happiness, the thief of joy is that of rumination.
Absolutely.
You know?
Lucy Hone says, anything we ruminate on for more than 3 minutes ends badly.
Yeah.
I've taken that away. It's really changed my life, actually.
I can't recall his name, Thoreau Gordeau or something, that wrote Life in the Woods or whatever it be.
Yep.
He said, any thought you have indoors is a bad one. So that's not bad, eh?
That's good.
Yeah. So look, let's grab on that, right, for the piece that's continuing. Personal pursuits is something I wrote in the email yesterday, because it just organically came to mind. If I'm going to talk to Greg Cream, what am I going to talk about? I'm going to talk about mindfulness. I'm going to talk about personal leadership. I'm going to talk about personal pursuits. It's just organic for me to think that way with you.
Yeah.
You're a fascinating man, Greg Cream. You've been around for a little while, and you know, I've described you to many people in many different ways, including calling you my spirit animal. But ultimately, your weekends are inactive. I find that you don't have a great deal on your plate as per your weekdays. So just to share with those listening a little bit that I know about you is, if it's not surfing, it's kite surfing. If it's not kite surfing, it's grabbing your Beretta and shooting clay pigeons. If it's not grabbing your Beretta, it's gliding planes. Wait a minute, you can only stay up in the air for so long, so now you're a sailor, you're a yachtsman. Right, so you now have a yacht that rivals that of the billionaires' yachts.
Absolutely.
If it's not that, I was talking to you the other day about my paddleboard.
Yes.
My paddleboard. And you said, aren't they great? And I said, what do you mean they? And you said, oh, well, I've got about eight. Right? So what is it? Now, the point here is not that you're an abundant spender of toys.
I am.
But, well, you are. But it's more that you're constantly challenging yourself and constantly trying different things and constantly, I guess the word is, experiencing things.
Yeah. Yeah. So life needs to have some joy in it. So I took on a lot of responsibility as a very young man, and I was married very early. By the time I was 22, I'd finished breeding. I had two daughters. I had the weight of the world, and I was caring for people. I was basically preparing to be a minister.
Mm.
And my mother visited me in Geraldton where I was a pastor, and she said, you know, something's really wrong with this picture. And she said, you don't have enough joy. And I already had all of my own traits, and I was surfing at the time and other things, but she said, I'm going to pay for a scuba course. And it was like, wow, investing in me. So we're going to talk a little bit of investing in me, the desire to be happy, the joy, the experience of life. There are so many things in life that are so amazingly exciting that once I had a taste, and my mother gave it to me with the scuba, but there was another piece, and I want to talk about mental health for a moment. What she observed was I had too much responsibility for a man as young as I was, who did not have the skills to deal with everything that I found on my plate, and it was affecting me terribly, was actually in a state of decline. So I went and did scuba diving. The thing I discovered with scuba was that everything above the surface disappeared below the surface. What do I mean? I could be in a really traumatic, poor mental health state, and then the minute I dropped overboard underwater, reliant on artificial air sources, surrounded by curious fish, the potential of sharks to bite me in half, my focus, my intent to stay alive and to be excited and exhilarated was so powerful that when I came back to the surface, it took 3 and 4 hours for everything that I'd left above, all those cares, concerns, worries, fears, doubts, took hours to come back, which meant I had a respite. And in that respite, I found that the joy of experiencing something that's got some exhilaration was powerful. And then in about the same period of time, I went from surfing relatively small waves into surfing big waves. And by big waves, I don't mean monstrous waves. Nowadays, if you look at Nazare, they're big waves. If you look at ship sterns, but I'm talking 3 times head high waves, and suddenly being out there and held underwater and actually enjoying it, the experience of being in a washing machine, it was just like, as long as I survive, this is a fun, you know, no matter how much it hurts. And there was, each one of these things had the same impact. It made me better. It took me away. So my yacht, the minute I start rigging it, and I'm in the breeze and I'm sensing the breeze and its direction and its strength, and I know I've got to trim sails and, you know, head up an estuary or whatever, it's the same thing. It just removes me from everything. It's like being underwater again, the underwater experience.
Can I grab that for a minute?
Yeah.
Because I'm listening to all this and it's so powerful. But there'll be people listening that probably think, oh, you know, I've seen Greg Cream, I've seen him rocking in here in his Maserati sideways and his fancy clothes.
As you
and
do.
And he's a coach, so he's obviously overpaid. And,
oh, it's terrible.
You know, it's, and everybody else. But I can't afford to have yachts and scuba equipment.
Yeah.
So what does that look like for someone that is thinking that way?
I think you've got to find the real way forward rather than to actually accept what's around you. So Clay said something interesting. I have a lot of toys. It's true. But I don't necessarily overinvest. So the yacht I bought recently is something I've waited a long time for, and I paid $5,000. I thought it was a great buy.
See, people are visualising $500,000.
Yeah, they're thinking $500,000.
This is mining, right?
But next
you've got the Emperor. The Emperor's online. He would have something and it had 4-leaf clovers painted on the siding.
No chimneys.
Yeah, correct.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. The big car. So then I discovered I'd been duped. You can buy the same yacht for $3,000 and $2,000. See, you don't have to spend a lot of money to access these things. And in fact, some people spend more money on a weekend at the Burswood or wherever at the casino, blowing it up in smoke. It's a one-off event. Yeah, sure, it's an escape, but it's not something that makes you feel you've learned something.
So you can't put a monetary value on it,
per se. You can't.
I mean, we could joke and say, well, I've never seen an unhappy person on a jet ski, but the bottom
line...
Well,
I've had one, and that wasn't expensive.
But the thing is, I guess, the point is, I've been guilty over the years of seeking joy, seeking happiness,
yeah,
and wasting a lot of money in the process when, yep, you know what, it was in front of me.
Yep.
It was in, yep, front of me. I could go down, I could just go down to the beach and just enjoy some time.
True. And I have a mate one time that used to stand on the boat slip, and he'd say to each person who was launching, do you mind if I go fishing with you?
Mm-hmm.
He'd have his fishing gear.
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually someone would say, great, jump on board.
Get on.
Get on board. If you want to, you can. Because that guy, you know, he understood that. And in fact, one of my better mates I met, he was waiting with a surfboard, would you believe, in the dark, on a jetty, we were surfing offshore. And he was waiting until someone, and he, all he wanted to do was be dropped off out at sea.
Yeah.
I said, well, I'm going surfing too. So, you know, if you want to, you can. You don't need to have an excuse.
I said earlier, you know, I'm really off social media. Right?
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to say, yes, I go on LinkedIn occasionally because it's a great way to find out where people are these days. But I pretty much try to stay off it. And I heard something in more recent time about social media that I thought was really powerful. And it's probably nothing new, but I thought it was really powerful. And it spoke of the problem with social media is we are looking at people,
yep,
when they are at their best,
yep,
when we're at our worst.
Yes.
How good is that?
Yes.
So you wake up on a Monday morning, things are going terribly for you.
Yeah.
An array of different personal reasons.
Kids are screaming.
Professional reasons and reasons.
Yep.
And yep, there it is. You start your day by looking at an optic,
yep,
of someone you went to school with that's sprawled across the front of an Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
it's not even their Alfa Romeo. They just threw themselves on the bonnet of it. Right?
Is that right? Yeah.
So that's just a personal joke, people. But anyway.
With a four-leaf clover.
Yeah, correct. But ultimately, that's the danger of things like social media. You know, there's another saying very similar to the one I said earlier, which is comparison is the thief of happiness.
Yes. Yes.
And I think, yes, that's really cool.
Yeah, it is. And really, you know, the thing, make time to live, because, mm-hmm, I know we're wrapping up now. Mm-hmm. Make time for self. Invest in self. You know, and in order to do so, accept that life is that tornado. We live in Tornado Alley, literally. And in every storm, there's an eye.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing about all tornadoes is there is an eye.
And the bigger the tornado, the bigger the eye.
Bigger the eye. And you can do one of two things. You can get swept up, and as you, one of the other famous Clay instructions to the team is, we don't do drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so often we're caught up in the periphery of the tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can just hang on to something, wait for the storm, regroup. And that's where you invest in self. That's where you actually take the time and say, I need the best me here. And go back to the scuba. That's why I used to go underwater.
Mm-hmm.
You're not there forever. The tank runs out.
Mm.
I've run tanks out at depth.
You know what? The risk we've got with that statement, Greg, is I've got this visualization that at some point today I'm going to come out here in the kitchenette area, yep, and someone's going to fill the sink up with water.
Yeah, they'll be in the sink.
It'll be Teague's payroll's got a head dunked in the water. And it'll be bubbles surfacing.
Investing in self.
So what are you doing? So Greg said, invest in yourself, go underwater. Right, so...
good one, Teague's.
So, look, this is a conversation. All these conversations I have with everyone that I sit down with, I mean, that is the moment for me to be mindful. Again, I was at 1,000 thoughts because things are popping up on the screen and everything else. And, you know, that's just something I need to work on because it is distracting. It breaks me out of the moment. But this hour on the Friday when I do this is arguably the most mindful I am in a week. It forces me to sort of sit here and listen because if I don't, I'm going to miss something valuable. So...
there's something really important that one of our friends on the screen just said to us that everyone should hear. It's hard to beat something that makes you smile inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so often we're smiling outside. You've got to find those moments where you smile inside. I think they're critical.
Mm. People, here we are. We've learnt, reminded ourselves, reflected on, whatever it be, an understanding around just being present and being in presence so we can enjoy those things. And as Greg's just summarised, they make a smile on the inside.
Yeah, a real smile.
We've talked about what leadership is, and leadership is not that business card. It is not that title. It is how we grow as a person and how we share that with ourselves and, for that matter, share it then with others. We then talked about go and have some fun. Go and find some joy. Go and experience some different things. And you don't need a massive bank balance to do so. You don't need to do the comparison because your friend's holidaying in Paris. You know what? Go down to the beach. You know, it's there for us. It's all around us.
Yeah.
We are operating in a tornado. Whether the analogy equates to being in this organisation or it just means life as a general these days, it really is great. And that's why, and thank you for popping that up before, Joplin 2011, the documentary Netflix called Twister, I just found that really quite spiritually awakening. It's quite a powerfully done documentary. It's really good. But it makes you realise how cheap it is in some regard as well. I mean, I've used different examples we all have of how cheap life can be, but what's interesting around that documentary again is there'd be a car with four people in it. Three would get out unscathed.
Yeah.
One wouldn't.
Yeah.
Why?
Mm.
No one will ever have the answer to that, ever. Mm. The message, though, is that ultimately it's about living the life that we want to live, embracing it, finding that inner happiness.
Yeah.
Not from a book, not from an app, just from experiencing things.
Doing and the work.
If we want to talk about that positive psychology piece again, that's not about being happy all the time. It's about doing positive things. As our good friend, the Moz, Dr. Phil Jaunce, has educated us.
Yeah.
You don't have to be happy with what's going on in the tornado right now.
Mm.
But you have got the ability to choose positive actions.
Yep.
So people, what we'll do is we'll come back online and we'll have a little chat with Greg if we'd like to. If we'd like to make any commentary, whatever it needs to be, please come back online and share with Greg.
That was the best hour I've probably had all year. The most I've been actually present.
You're awesome,
too. Yeah, I'd say it's something I obviously need to work on because I've lost a bit of mindfulness, though. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Clay.
Thanks, Tim. Nice, you're awesome, mate. And Greg is stopping by. When he exits this office, he's stopping by payroll. Not because he wants to be paid to, but because he wants to stop by.
Probably resonate a lot with what Greg said. There's not a single pursuit that has brought me more joy in my life, and it's can't think of a single thing that's exposed me to, I guess, more beauty with environments, other people, different parts of the world. Yeah, it doesn't have to be surfing. I think everyone just needs to find something that's super fulfilling for them and relentlessly pursue it.
Great. I
like that. You're awesome, mate. Anyone else got any final commentary? Any thoughts?
Hey, it's Peter here.
Hello, Pete.
I mean, I'm not young, as you know, but it's only in the latter years that you actually start to understand, probably the wrong word, but you think through what is important because, quite honestly, you know, your life is just like a roller coaster. I mean, you jump on and you don't really know where you're going to end up there.
Yeah, Pete, I think about this quite a bit, to be honest with you, and I can answer it in simple ways. I could say things like, I think we become wiser, I think we become fatigued of, you know, not having that inner peace and that happiness that we believe we desire or we're entitled to, or whatever it may well be. I also could say that I think that we get closer to an appreciation or respect or whatever the right descriptor is, that the end comes at some point. I know for myself, my psyche has changed dramatically in recent time because, you know, many of you know, I've had some setbacks. I've had a tough couple of years and I'm more conscious of these things now. But I can't give a great answer, Pete, because I think it is one of those conversation pieces for us to sit down, or you and Greg or myself, or sit down, because I don't know myself, but it's a question I ask myself daily. I mean, what is it? What's stopping you, what's stopping us all from just making that choice and just embracing the things that make us happy? Why do we still continue to chase other things? I don't know, Pete. It's a damn good question.
Look, I'll give you my thoughts.
Please.
I know we haven't got much time.
No, please. But
we should have had this conversation, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And there wasn't these sorts of conversations being had at that time. Now, since then, of course, I mean, the phone, the social media, all the devices that are sort of scrambling people's brains and, you know, clogging your life and clogging your arteries with, you know, useless information. Now, I'll give you an example. I mean, I've got a 14-year-old girl, and she was, you know, she had a chat group. She's all, was the most important thing in her life. If she missed something, then, you know, life was going to end, and that was it. My wife and I, sent her to a school, an outdoor education school in Victoria this year. And she has come back to life. She's only 14, and she now is talking, and her mannerisms and her life is where I would hope it would be.
Yeah.
Because all that pressure and all that other thing has been taken away, and it's been replaced by smelling the roses, going on treks, you know, going on just hanging out with kids and not having access to social media. They're not allowed to have fun.
That's yeah. Just enjoying life, Pete.
Peter,
experiencing life. Spot on. I was lucky enough at a very early age. I mean, I got kicked in the guts a few times when my dad died and stuff like that, but I experienced a lot, and I'm very, very thankful for that. It was tough, but at the same time, it was fulfilling, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And you have lived a life, Pete, and that's why I always, you know, jokingly say, but I actually mean it with such admiration. You know, you and I have sat down and done the podcast, and I could do a podcast with you each and every week, much like my good friend here, Mr. Greg Cream, because you guys have lived incredible lives and experienced so much. Before I forget this thought, and I'll let Greg close up, but it's interesting. I looked at it yesterday, the website, but I've got this short-term memory issue. But ultimately, there's an artist in America, I believe, and he's taken a series of photos of people in society standing on trains, all sorts of different things, and then using AI, they've removed the devices from people's hands.
Yeah.
And it's a surreal piece to have a look at. It's quite surreal. I'll find it later, or someone can find it for me and pop it up in the comments and have a look at it. It's just quite surreal that people on trains and everything else, and it's got them standing there with our phones and devices in their hands, and it's like they're just looking into the abyss. They're just lost. You know, so Greg, your commentary.
You know, I think, Peter, you touched a nerve, and I could talk to you all day about this. Two of my granddaughters, I have a number of grandchildren, two of them went to a school in Victoria where in year nine they were not allowed access to their mobile phone devices or anything else. So they went to Timbertop. And they had to experience life, warts and all, without distraction, including with the rest of society. Both of those girls, their lives changed. They struggled going in because they already had devices, and they came out with a real understanding of life is more important without the screen. So here's a challenge to everyone. Pick a day on the weekend, just a day, where you don't look at a device, you put it away for 8 hours, and you'll be absolutely amazed how refreshed you feel.
I don't know if that's something Sanjay can achieve.
He'll ever go.
He needs his TikTok. All right, people, we're going to have to wrap it up because it's well after...
Oh, congratulations.
She came back a couple of weeks back, and she said to me, and it just is true as, she said, "Dad, I don't really need a phone anymore. Here's someone that couldn't live without one."
Yeah.
Earlier. "I don't really need a phone anymore. It wastes my life."
Yeah.
So, Pete, I reckon that's a great way for us to close that, because
that was
we don't need it. We don't need it. We feel we need it. We just don't need it. So people, I'm going to shut it off right now. I have to. There's people dropping off like flies, so to speak. Thank you all very much. Thank you to Greg once again, as always. And let's have an awesome Friday. And let's try to carry some one percenters out of this forward and see how they can to progress things for us respectfully. So thanks very much, all.
Thanks, appreciate everyone. It. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.